This is Southern U Talk. I'm Dale Desmond. Just getting started on the 9 o'clock hour here on your Christmas Eve morning. In studio, Zach Renstrom, Washington County Water Conservancy District. Good morning, Zach. How are you, man?
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Good. Good to hear you. Your monthly visit here. And it could not come at a better time. We've got a lot to get into. We're going to get into the meetings in Vegas last week. We're going to get into what happened, what it means going forward, how things are going to change, if things are going to change, what things need to change, your opinions, your thoughts. And for those of you listening, you can text us the new text line. Zach used to hand out his personal cell phone on the radio. And just saying, text me anytime.
Okay.
And which would be, you know, normally fine. I've got a 208 number. And so people would be like, well, where am I texting this to anyway? The new text line is 435-261-4540. If you have questions, you have concerns, fond childhood memories, whatever it is, for Zach Renstrom from the Washington County Water Conservancy District in studio for an hour. We've also got, you can turn your headphones. There's a little box. If you look right over here somewhere, there's a little dial. You got it. Good. 435-261-4540, the number to text in. You can call us 673-5890. We'll take calls into the second segment, but you can send your text in, and we'll set these up for Zach. First, the most important question. Christmas shopping all done? Are you ready to go? What's the plan here?
I am done. I like to get it done early and out of the way.
Okay.
And I will say I'm addicted to Amazon.
Okay.
And so I just kind of go to my kids and say, what do you want, my wife? And then I just get on Amazon and have it shipped.
And yeah. Do you do a gift exchange with siblings or with are your kids older? How old are your kids?
Yeah, so my kids are early 20s.
Okay, mine
late,
too.
Late
yeah,
teens. Yep. Yeah, and so I get them gifts. They exchange amongst them. They each get gifts, and so I will say we keep Christmas kind of on the simple side.
Yeah,
not a lot of money spent. Just kind of keeping it simple and nice.
Yeah, I was talking to Natalie Larson from the city council. Was in here yesterday. She said, we don't hardly buy any gifts. It's mostly experiences. We take the kids. We do a big trip, go to Disneyland, whatever, with the grandkids and everybody. We don't do a lot of gifts. But, and maybe it's too late to do it now, but I mentioned it earlier. There's an app that's called Pick Names. What is it called? Choose Names, something like that. Basically, it allows you to, I'm trying to find what it is. What it does is you put everybody's name in there, and then you go in and register. Basically, it's a registry, and everybody can see, you know, what everybody else wants. Yeah. And you put a limit in there. It's pretty cool.
That's nice. That's a good idea.
Yeah, and that way, you know, if you have adult kids and they're all choosing for each other, it's pretty cool. I think it's called Choose Names is what it's called. So you can do that next year. Let's get into really what we're talking about here. And again, you can text us if you guys have questions for Zach Renstrom, 435-261-4540. Vegas meetings this last week. I remember I read about it, and I thought, we got to have Zach in on and find out what happens here. And I looked, and I saw you were coming in, so I was really excited about this. Talk about what happened. And did we really get anything done? It sounds like there was some good things, but maybe not, solutions anyway.
Yeah, so to kind of go back, what's going on is the states that have the Colorado River water, basically about 100 years ago, they got together and formed a compact. And it's called the 1922 Compact. And it outlines how the Colorado River is going to be divvied up and who gets what on the river. The problem is, the fundamental problem is they divvied up more water than there's actually wet water.
Mm.
And so...
Explain that. Yeah. Wet water, what does that mean?
So what they did is they assumed that 7.5 million acre feet of water will be used in the upper basin states, which is Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico. And 7.5 million acre feet would be used in the lower basin, which is basically Arizona, Nevada, and California. And then they gave another 1.5 million to Mexico. And so you look at that and you're like, okay, you know, that's about 16.5 million acre feet of water. Well, the problem is in the last 20 years, the rivers are only producing more around 12.
Oh.
So that almost 5 million acre feet short.
Yeah.
And to put that in perspective, you know, Lake Powell holds about 25 million acre feet of water. And so the last 20 years, the people have been using, especially the lower basins, have been using all this allotment of water. And that's one of the reasons why Lake Powell and Lake Mead are so low. It is because there just has not been that much precipitation that has fallen in the last 20 years. And so now you're getting to the point where Lake Powell and Lake Mead are at a critical level.
Right.
And why it's so critical is because they also produce a lot of electricity. And we're getting to the point where they will have to shut down the turbines to stop producing electricity. And so people say, well, so what? Well, that's the cheapest, most reliable yep. electricity on the Western United States grid. And so if Lake Powell or Lake Mead go offline, not producing electricity, everybody's power rates are going to skyrocket. We're going to have rolling brownouts. Then the other thing is a lot of this water is currently being used to grow, you know, food, alfalfa.
Yeah.
And so there's, so we gotten to the point where the reservoirs are low, the system's starting to crash, and now it comes time to say, okay, we have to take cuts. And so.
And what does that look like?
Well, that's the big thing. And so the lower basin states are basically saying, upper basin state, you have to do all the cuts. And the upper basin state saying, oh, no, no, no. That's not fair. I'm a very strong believer in it.
Yeah.
Lower basin states, you need to take a cut. And so basically that's the big disagreement. And they can't decide on it. And everybody right now is getting ready, getting their lawyers together. And so how the compact was originally set up was each state was to assign a commissioner. And if there was issues on the river, these commissioners were supposed to get together and figure it out.
Right.
They have been meeting every single week for the last past 2 years, and they basically can't figure it out. They've drawn lines in the sand saying this is a no-go. And so that meeting in Vegas, we have it every year.
Okay.
And usually it's just like, hey, here's the technical stuff. But this meeting was like, are these individuals going to reach an agreement? And I don't think they are. And so they were just basically giving us the status of that report, and everybody's very nervous about it because the system's crashing, and if Lake Powell goes offline, you know, you're talking some major issues.
For sure. He's Zach Renstrom, Washington County Water Conservancy District in studio. How much power does Southern Utah, does St. George get from Glen Canyon and from Hoover Dam? Do we get any from there? Is it some? Is it, what's the percentage? How does that work?
So we do get some electricity from Lake Powell. We don't get any from Lake Mead that I'm aware of. But Lake Powell, we do get some. And so what happens is the federal government came out and says, hey, we have this electricity. We're going to, you know, sell it. And so we have several power entities here in Southern Utah. Like Washington City, St. George City, Dixie Power, Rocky Mountain Power. And some of those have contracted to get that cheap power. And so that's what they're getting. So we don't get a lot percentage, but what will happen is if that goes down, then the open market where we get a lot of our electricity, it just becomes supply and demand.
Yeah.
And so those rates will skyrocket. And people will be scrambling to make up that power. And what's interesting is at the same time we'd be losing a lot of power, we also have these data centers starting to come online, and they're using a lot more power.
Yeah.
So it's like the supply and demand is really starting
going in different directions,
yeah.
Wrong directions, correct.
And at the water district, I mean, I'm concerned about the water, but, you know, one of our biggest costs is actually electricity. We have pumps everywhere. And if all of a sudden these power rates double, that'll make it really hard. And, of course, everybody's electricity rates will double. And there's just all these scenarios that start to get really nasty and scary.
Yeah.
And so it comes back to, well, we can't let the river crash. We can't let these reservoirs crash. So we've got to figure out a deal. So the deal is cut water. Someone's got to take a cut.
Right.
Who?
Right. When you say crash, when you say a reservoir crash, what does that entail? What does that look like?
So the main thing is it gets so low that water cannot literally, they can't put water through those turbines anymore.
Okay. It goes below the feed area.
Yeah.
Is there still water in those reservoirs in Lake Mead, and in Lake Powell that are putting pressure on the dam to push these turbines? Does it, when there's less water, do the turbines spin less when there's less pressure? Or is the pressure consistent? It just, if it gets below this level, that's bad.
So two things is, first of all, as the reservoir goes down, there's less water to go through, and so mm-hmm. that slows the turbines down, and then there's less pressure, and so you get two effects going on. But you get to a point, and I don't, people will probably understand this, like when water's going down a sink, you start to see that little swirly thing.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have that going on a dam. And the reason why is because it's called cavitation.
Right.
And that cavitation gets down into the turbines and will destroy the turbines, and they would just break.
Blow up, yeah.
And so they get to a point where they're like, we're going to start seeing those swirls, and we can't have that going on.
Yeah.
And at that point, the dam shuts down. Now, you still can get water through other areas, so there won't be water flowing through the dam.
Yeah.
It's not like all of a sudden it dries it off.
Right.
But you take that energy offline.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
What does a brownout look like? Why do they call it a brownout? Where does that term come from?
So what they do is they basically, instead of just like shutting down the whole grid, they'll go and shut down segments of the grid for like an hour at a time.
Okay.
And so they'll say, okay, we're going to shut down this area for 1 hour. And then we're going to shut down this area for 1 hour. We're going to shut down this area. And so it's not like a blackout where everything's black.
Gotcha.
It's just certain segments, and they call it brownout.
Yeah.
I don't even know why.
Well, I drove into Vegas last week, and the air quality was terrible. I thought that was a brownout. That was disgusting. I went to the airport, and I came back.
Yeah.
It was gross. But I'm curious to know, as these meetings continue to happen, are they inching closer to, the lower basin wants this, upper basin wants this? Are we getting closer, or is there, like you said, that line in the sand, it is hard and fast and nobody's moving?
It depends on who you talk to. So it's kind of, is the glass half full, half empty?
Yeah.
I'm generally a half full type of guy.
Good.
But in my opinion, this is going to go to the courts. And the reason why I say that is because there are some positions that certain states have taken that are just untenable. You can't deal with it.
Yeah.
And they're in a position where they're like, listen, even if they wanted to make the cuts, they can't. And so basically it goes to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, yeah.
And they need some people in black robes to make that decision. As an engineer, whenever somebody in a black robe makes a decision, it makes me very nervous.
You're right.
And so that's what everybody's nervous about, because we just don't know what will happen. I mean, the Supreme Court could make a ruling that would be just destroy Utah.
That's right. That's my next question was, what is the, because the federal government's threatening, essentially, to get involved in this. And what does that look like?
So two things is, so the federal government owns and operates all these reservoirs. They run a lot of these diversion channels. And in the 1922 compact, the Fed is a partner to that agreement.
Okay.
And so... And you're also dealing with interstate issues. That's a Supreme Court a constitutional thing.
Yeah.
So you have all these things. So the feds are in charge. To give the feds credit, they're basically saying, states, you try to figure this out. We don't want to. You tell us what you want, and we will make it happen. But it's getting to that point. They can't. And so the feds, when I say the feds, the Bureau of Reclamation that owns and operates all those reservoirs, they could come in and do some very hard line. This is what it's going to be. If you don't like it, sue us, and it'll go to it'll go that way.
And it will, for sure.
Yeah. If the feds say, no, we're not going to deal with this, then it would go to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So,
as we move forward, are we seeing the same thing throughout the West and other rivers? I mean, I know that Colorado's obviously one of the biggest. I know that there's a lot of flooding going on in the Columbia River, mm-hmm. for instance. Do you keep an eye on other water sources around the region and around the state to see how are they handling things? How do you, fact find, if you will, in other areas?
So I do watch everything in the Western United States. Like right now, New Mexico and Texas just got done with a big lawsuit over a river. And I watch that very closely. I actually read the legal pleadings from those cases, because mm-hmm. I want to know what's going on. I want to see what the Supreme Court's doing, because I think it's very, well, I think in my job, it's, I think it's very, very important to see what's going on and follow all that stuff. And also, like up in Washington, what's interesting about that flooding is, if you would have looked like 20 years ago and a big event like that would have happened, at this time of year, that would have been a big snow event.
Yeah.
Not a big rain event. And it's a rain event. And so also how precipitation is coming out of the sky is definitely changing, and that affects how we have to operate and change our operation. So yeah, like that would have been a huge snowstorm. Everybody, the ski resort would be in like cheering. But instead, it was a rain event and you have massive flooding.
Yeah.
And so as an engineer, we have to adapt to that.
We do.
And also as a water provider, we have to adapt to that. And that's important to see those changes. And make those changes.
Okay. Well, the text line is open, 435-261-4540. You can text in. You have questions for Zach Renstrom in studio here. We're going to open the phones, have phones available. I don't know how many people are going to be wanting to call in on Christmas Eve. Hey, we're here. You guys should be tuned in. You guys should be paying attention to what's going on around here. So was there good news that came out of the Vegas meetings that was positive? It was like, okay, we're making some ground here. Or, was there, or even, you know, when it comes to technical stuff or, you know, other things came out of the Vegas meetings?
So I think there's a lot of positives. Is first of all, whenever parties are still talking, I think that's positive. There was some new technical stuff that people have been doing studies on the river that was very fascinating that came out. For me, it was very, very effective of going there is because everybody's at that event. And so I spend a lot of my time. Sometimes I'll fly to Washington, D.C. to go and meet and talk with somebody for an hour. And it's a pain. I hate flying to Washington, D.C., but also that person's in Las Vegas and I can see that person.
Yeah.
And so I met with the acting director of the Bureau of Reclamation, had a really good discussion about some very, very local issues.
Yeah.
And it was great to have that discussion. And I mean, he was there, everybody that works around him was there, and we could have a half hour discussion about something that's very important.
Beats going to D.C. I'd rather go to Vegas than D.C. any day.
Well, I can just drive there and drive back. and even the cost. But then on the flip side, we had the state engineer there. We had the director of Department of Natural Resources there. We had a lot of key individuals down there. And so I've been working on some legislation that would only be really important for us here in Washington County. And, you know, I was able to go to the state engineer and say, hey, do you support this bill? I could kind of go and get a lot of that stuff done because they were just all sitting at the breakfast table and got a lot done that way.
Yeah.
Instead of driving all the way to Salt Lake. So that's the best thing about that Vegas meeting is everybody's there and we can just have all this great networking talking.
Right. And you can spin some roulette while you're at it. It's very all inclusive. You know, I mean, everybody. No, I'm kidding.
I'm not a gambler.
No. So. Okay. All right. He's Zach Renstrom, Washington County Water Conservancy District. A couple more minutes before we take a break. I do want to get into in the next segment. I want to get into, we have calls coming in. I'm going to hit this button and have them hang on. If you're, holding, keep hanging on. We're going to take calls into the next segment. But I do want to get into, the Santa Clara Reservoir and in Pine Valley. And some of the things that are changing, that have changed, mm-hmm. that are going to be affecting folks in our area, in St. George and farther down. As time goes on in the next probably year or so, things are definitely going to change. So we'll get to that. Take a quick break. We're coming back with Zach Renstrom, Washington County Water Conservancy District. You lines are open, 673-5890. Or you can text in your questions. 435-261-4540 on a Christmas Eve morning. Good morning, everybody. KDXU News Time is 9:31. I'm Dale Desmond. This is Southern U Talk. And in studio, we got Zach Renstrom, the Washington County Water Conservancy District. The text lines are open, 435-261-4540, or you can call us up. The phone line's open for the segment here, 673-5890, 673-5890. Zach, we got a text from a listener that says, with ongoing disputes over the Colorado River and growing water uncertainty in southern Utah, why should longtime residents feel confident staying in St. George instead of moving to a state with more reliable water?
Yeah, so first of all, being in southern Utah, or even in the state of Utah, we are doing it right here. And so...
How so?
So we plan all our models, and so all our projection and all our infrastructure, we're assuming a hotter and drier environment. And so if it does continue to get warmer and it continues to get drier, everybody that has a connection or will get a connection, we have a very robust plan that has been looked at by the federal government, by the Division of Drinking Water, the state guys. Mm-hmm. And they're all like, yes, this is a very robust plan, and it has a lot of drought protection in there. Like, I'll give you one example. If you go out to Sand Hollow Reservoir and you look at, it holds about 50,000 acre feet of water, and you're like, that's quite a bit of water. You can see it. We've stored three times that amount of water underneath Sand Hollow Reservoir yep. as a drought buffer. And so we're doing all these things here to actually make sure we're prepared for exactly what that person is concerned about. Our new 20-year plan outlines things that we're trying to do. So our reuse system that we're getting up and going here will actually make us more resilient, make us more reliant on just our local water supply, and make sure what we're doing here. That's almost kind of rare in the Western United States. A lot of these cities will be having issues, but at least locally here, we have a very robust plan and we're prepared for it.
When was the last time somebody, I don't say cornered you, but approached you in Walmart or at the mall or whatever, recognized you from somewhere and said, hey, tell me about the future of water? Does it happen out in public a lot all the time? And when they say, hey, what's the future of our water system, do you have an elevator, you know, pitch, you know, that's, yeah. because I've heard you say we're good for 20 years after that.
It kind of depends on how much they want to get it. But I if they just want the 30-second soundbite, I'm like, listen, we have a very detailed technical study that outlines every specific aspect of where our water's come from, how much water we have, how much drought buffer we have. And you can find that technical study on our website. We're very transparent about it. You can go there, download it, and review it all you want. But that plan has been reviewed by multiple engineering firms, multiple agencies, and they've always come back and
checked off, right.
They're like, this is one of the best plans we've ever seen, and you guys are being very proactive and very smart to prepare this because most communities don't.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of them are thinking, you know, that's a problem for future mm-hmm. city.
Yeah.
People, whatever, and we're thinking about it ahead of time. All right, phone lines are open, 673-5890. Let's get to Robert on the phone. Robert wants to have some questions from St. George. Robert, good morning, buddy. What do you got? Are you there?
Robert.
There we go.
Richard.
Richard, I said Richard. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Anyway. Richard, I'm sorry. It says Richard right there. I just read Robert for some mm-hmm. reason. Richard, how are you? What do you got for Zach Rensburg?
Anyway, brings a chuckle when they talked about all this water going down the Columbia River, the dam buster state, if you remember.
Right.
They make me laugh. But anyway, so are you up on Utah Hill right now? Got the cloud seeders going full blast? Where we do that anymore?
So we do cloud seeding. Actually, the state of Utah is the entity that does the cloud seeding around here. I don't know if we're doing that today or not. Basically, it's all through the state of Utah. They look at the Doppler radar, and you actually have to have precipitation actually falling before those even work. And so I just haven't checked them this morning because I came into the radio.
Yeah, well, they fly up into the clouds. How does it work?
Not here. We have stationary sites. So basically, it looks like a big, they just create a big flame with propane. And then they inject silver iodine in that flame. And so the hot air pushes that silver iodine up into the clouds and seeds the clouds that way. The state has been experimenting with the plane down here. They're not going to do it this year. They're kind of focusing on some stuff up north. And sometimes they just fly a plane right through those storms. But it has to be raining or snowing for it to really even start working.
Actively, right. Richard, anything else for Zach?
Last question.
Okay.
Now, you're up there cheering for us for the Colorado River. So does that mean the pipeline's still on the back burner in 25 years?
So you're talking about the Lake Powell pipeline, I assume. And so the Lake Powell pipeline, we are going to – all these issues on the Colorado River have to be resolved before we can even start talking about the Lake Powell pipeline again. So in the meantime, our 20-year plan does not include the Lake Powell pipeline. It includes a ton of other projects to make sure we have water here.
Awesome. Thank you, Richard. Let's pivot to Pine Valley. Let's talk mm-hmm. about Pine Valley. The reservoir there, they're doing work on the dam as we mm-hmm. speak. The big fire, it's created a real interesting situation, a crazy and a sad situation in a lot of ways. How are things going to be affected to people in St. George and below in the next, I don't know, year, couple of years? What are we looking at going forward?
So usually after a wildfire, it's the next 5 years. And there's a lot of variables that affect that, but generally 5 years is the rule of thumb that we concern about. And so, like, if you go to the Pine Valley Reservoir, almost half of that now is filled with ash debris, and it's a mess. Of course, that ash also went down. It's gone into Baker. It's getting into Gunlock. And so it's bringing a ton of sediment and silt into those reservoirs. And so right now we're working on applying to dredge those reservoirs and get all that stuff out of there. We're talking millions and millions of dollars. We're also very concerned about the fish. Mm. And so one of the things that the Water District does is we've taken on the task to keep these fish happy, for lack of a better word. Because they're endangered or threatened fish, and if we don't keep them happy, that would bring up the whole other stuff. And so
a whole extra set. Yeah. What does dredging look like? How does that go about when you're dredging out, a sediment does it settle or how does that work?
Yeah. So exactly. It's usually at the top of the dam and it's usually kind of mucky stuff. And so, we have to get in there with big, heavy equipment. We're talking track hose and big trucks and just literally scoop it out and haul it. It's very difficult because, first of all, that is not easy material to move around. Like, if it was sand, it's pretty easy for a backhoe. But we're talking mucky, nasty, soupy.
Yeah.
Where their trucks get stuck all the time. And then the other big thing is where to put it. It's not like we can just put it on the shore. We usually have to truck it a little ways away. So it's just very, very expensive to deal with all
that.
Is it
toxic? Is it mineral rich? What is it?
No, it has a ton of organics. And so if you want to plant a garden with it, actually be pretty good for gardening.
That's what I wondered, yeah.
But for foundations or anything to have a sediment or to have something put on top of it, it would be horrible.
Yeah.
A lot of clay in there and stuff like that. And so, yeah, if you want it for a garden, it would be really good. But,
I just see a lot of heavy machinery on top of the dam, putting stress on the dam, you know, I mean, trying to scoop it out the way, because I imagine there'd be loaders and trucks on top of the dam that they're working on right now. And I just see that putting a lot of stress on that. Like, gosh, what? It's just so scary.
So the weight of the, like a big track hoe on top of a dam is almost negligible.
Okay.
Compared to the force of the water behind there and the weight of the dam itself. And so that's
not a big deal.
No, it wouldn't even faze me on something like that.
Okay. How involved are you in the Pine Valley project?
Quite extensively.
Okay.
All the way up in Pine Valley, that Pine Valley Reservoir, not as much. But once we get down to Baker, the district doesn't own that reservoir, but we're very involved with it. It's an irrigation one. We're trying to work with them quite a bit. And then when we get to Gunlock, the district basically ensures that runs that reservoir with the help of St. George City. And we're very, very involved in Gunlock. And the goal is right now Gunlock is 100% agricultural water, irrigation water.
Yep.
Hopefully in about 10 years, it'll be 100% drinking water. And so I'm very concerned about Gunlock and everything that's going on up there.
So going downstream then, we've got this project is it on hold? Where are we at with this, with the Santa Clara Reservoir? I can't remember the name of it. It's got a
graveyard.
Okay. I should have remembered that.
Jerry hates that, by the way.
I mean, I guess I can see why. Where are we at with that? I know was it paused for a while? No. Was it on hold? It's always been moving forward.
So the big thing, to get a permit on a reservoir, to put it in perspective, it takes 20 years.
Yeah.
And so, like, Chief Toker Reservoir, 20 years. And so with Graveyard, you just don't get one permit from the federal government. You have to get tons of permits. So the one on that one is the Army Corps of Engineers is the one that we're working with on that reservoir. We got every other permit that you could ever imagine, and we're just sitting there waiting for this one last agency to give us permit. They send us comments. We respond to those comments. We've responded to all those comments. You send it back to them. And then it just sits. Like, they don't have any timeline that says they have to get it done by X date. We do, but they don't. And so we're just kind of waiting. And I can go off on how we desperately need, it's called NEPA reform.
NEPA. Okay.
National Environmental Protection Agency.
Oh yeah. Okay.
We have to reform this in our country. This is a critical thing because we're not helping the environment. We're not helping projects, and it's a big, big problem. The only people that are benefiting from the current environmental laws in this in the country is attorneys. They're making a ton of money.
Right.
I look at the money that we spend on all this stuff. If I could go buy, let's say, solar panels or land that has critical habitat or something else, then yeah, we're doing something. But right now, yeah, I can go off on this, by the way. I have to be careful. This is a trigger. It's wrong.
How involved then are you with politicians? With the I know that you guys were working with a lot of these guys in you're talking with a lot of them in Vegas day to day. How often do you get a call from Governor Cox or the with the commissioners? How often are you meeting with those guys?
All the time. In fact, it was funny because just the other night I went to a show up in Cedar City and there was Congresswoman Malloy.
Yeah.
And she saw me, and she came up to me. She's like, "Okay, Zach." And so we spent half an hour. My wife was like getting ticked. She's like, "Zach, you're here with the family." And I was like, "No." And the thing is, she's very active and wanted to know.
Yeah.
And so it was very. And so I'm about one third of my job is dealing with policy and working. And I feel very strongly for our elected leaders that it's my job is to give them the best information possible. Tell them the consequences. So when they make that policy decision, it was made in a well-informed process.
Sure. And
so I meet with everybody all the time. All our elected leaders know that they can text me, call me at any time. If they want to go on tours, I take them out because I feel very strongly that way.
Talking about politics, I don't know, do you find yourself at odds with other – with constituents, people, at your same, the same thing you do in a different state that are seeing things more from the EPA level and maybe from a different standpoint where you're like, you guys are seeing it all wrong and they're saying you're seeing it all wrong. How do you handle that when you're, it's, does it turn political?
Oh, sure.
with other people that are, from other water conservancy districts from a different state that see things differently and their voters see things differently?
So about a month ago, I was in San Francisco at a big water. It's called the Western Urban Water Caucus. And they, I know they looked at me as this crazy radical right winger from Utah because they would tell, we share what's going on.
Yeah.
And they shared this story about this project. And I was just like, that is just stupid. And they like, oh no. And they started going off on all this stuff. And I was like, no, you have less water. Your electricity is way more expensive and you didn't do anything really to help the environment. So why would you do that? And they're like, well, there's all this. And so, yeah. But with that said, I'm in San Francisco surrounded by the most liberal people in the country.
Absolutely.
And they're agreeing that our current environmental laws are broken.
Wow.
And need to be reformed. And they're like, yeah, it is bad, the situation.
So. And so what is the common theme then, the things that they are looking to change? Like, okay, we've got to fix ABC in these laws.
I think universally across the parties, there's a couple things. So I just talked about graveyard. We have all these permits.
Well,
I should just be able to get one permit. I have to get like tons of permits, and that shouldn't happen. One should be good enough. It should cover the project. Number two is the timelines. And so, like Chief Toker, 20 years, there was nothing on Chief Toker. Like, it wasn't critical habitat. There were no, California condors nesting there. It was a straightforward project, and it took 20 years. And that has to end. Like, there has to be, like, a reasonable, rational timeline. And then third, we have to have the reform in the courts. And so, right now, these environmental, I shouldn't say environmental groups, but these NGO, non-government organizations, they will sue us. And they go to court, and if they find, and literally they're arguing over commas, and if they can find one comma that the judge doesn't like, they make a lot of money.
And start all over.
Sometimes we have to start over.
It takes weeks and weeks and
months,
not longer.
Years.
Yeah.
And millions of dollars. And so we have to reform judicial oversight when it comes to these. And I believe very strongly that people should be able to go to the courts. I'm an attorney.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly about the courts. And people should have that as a right. But what we have right now is just morally wrong.
Yeah. Are you surprised when we've talked about people coming up to you at the, do you feel like people have your back? Do you feel like people in Southern Utah are kind of want to poke you in the chest a little bit. Are they on your side? Are they against you? Where do you think people are when you meet them? Have you seen them from both sides?
Oh, yeah. So I'd say for the most part, I love living in Washington County. Mm-hmm. People here are awesome. I feel that most people here are very community oriented. They really do care about this county. And I meet with all the cities, and we really do live in a special place. Like, and that's one of the reasons why people move here.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, we get a weasel. And
I like that term. I like that term.
Okay. I have no problem with somebody coming up to me and saying, "Hey, I disagree with X," and I say, "Why?"
Yeah.
A lot of times they have rational reason, and I was like, "Yeah,
X and Y is that? Oh, W H Y. Okay, you said X and Y. Okay, never mind."
And we'll have that, and they're like, "Well, I think this and this," and I'll say, "Yeah, I agree with you." But policy decision makers made that determination. For example, everybody wants to talk to me about growth. That is not up to me.
Right.
I don't promote growth. I don't discourage growth. I simply respond to growth.
Yeah.
Our city council and city mayors have the ones, and it should be, they're the ones that are elected to make that determination. So I'm like, I can't do anything about growth. I understand your concern, but I'm not the guy.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, if I buy black pens, ink,
yeah,
people will get mad that they weren't blue. If I buy blue, they get mad if I get black. If I have black and blue, they say, "Well, why didn't you include red?"
Red, right. You can't, right. Everybody's got an opinion. I remember when I first started doing radio, I was doing play-by-play for my little farm town high school. Uh-huh. And every single Sunday at church, Tom Parrish didn't have anything to say about the game. He was always giving me tips on how I was doing my play-by-play. So I imagine yeah. everybody yeah. Thinks they can do their job better than you. Engineer, an attorney, you've got several kids, you know how to handle that. Your wife, married for several years. Zach knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. We'll take a quick break. I do want to come back. We've got the text line still open, is 261-4540-435-261-4540. Zach Renstrom spending a couple of minutes, very, very generous to spend some time with us on New Year's Eve morning. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the these little reservoirs, Desert Color and others, that a lot of people complain about. Where is this water coming from? And these projects as they move forward. We'll talk about that coming up in a couple of minutes. 9:49. This is Southern U Talk. I'm Dale Desmond on KDXU.
From the land where palm trees sway.
KDXU News Times, 9:51. We've got a few more minutes with Zach Renstrom, the Washington County Water Conservancy District. And if you want to call in, you can do it real quick, 673-5890. We did have a call. Call the 673-5890, the phone number, the phone line. And then the studio, or the text line, rather, is 261-4540. If you've got a text, you can send us a text, and you can we'll read that to Zach and go over these. I do want to get into, I got out of radio full-time several years ago, right when Desert Color was coming on. I worked for Red Rock Property Management Vacation Rentals when Desert Color was just coming online. Everybody was freaking out. You're going to have this big lagoon when people are starving to death, you know, and just making this big deal. Like we were suddenly, it's a big problem. Talk about these projects. I know there's the is it out in Hurricane, the ski lagoon, or whatever you want to call it, the ski lake, the ski pond.
Yeah, yeah.
Now this isn't drinking water. It's brackish, a lot of these. And so talk about these projects and how they get pushed through and go through.
So the ones down Desert Color, those are using a water source that is very brackish. When I say brackish, it has a lot of salts in it. Mm-hmm. So it would be very, very expensive to convert that water to drinking water. And it'd just be very expensive too. So a lot of them are starting to use that. I know like Washington City, they've been working with a developer that's wanting to do some surf things, the one out there.
Yes.
Some of these ponds that you see, like Snow Canyon Parkway, I don't know if people know there, but there's like a little fishing pond there.
Yeah, yep.
That's actually an irrigation pond. where we pump water up there and we do certain things with irrigation. So some of them actually have a lot of function.
I cannot catch a fish in that pond. The other one over by the boat field I can do, but that one up there on Snow Canyon, I cannot catch anything there.
You're a pretty bad fisherman.
That's, I'm terrible. I know. I blame it.
They plan them.
I get it. I know. Thanks for rubbing salt in the wound.
No, but some of them are, some of these do use water that's very, it's good quality water. And so what the Water District Board did in conjunction, and all the cities voted for this in the kind of the main part of the county, is there, if there's a new entity that wants to come in and use water, they've got to go through this process where they have to come and get a vote from all the mayors.
Okay.
And it has to be 2/3 vote and say, yeah, this project's going to use a lot of water. Is that a good thing for our community or not? Yeah. And so moving forward, those projects are going to be put under a lot of scrutiny. We're not banning anything.
Sure.
We're just saying, hey, we have a precious resource, a limited resource. Is this the best use of it? And elected cities, a.k.a. mayors, tell us what you think.
I'll bet you the common resident of southern Utah knows more about groundwater and water conservation than people in many parts of the country.
Oh, 100%.
People in southern Utah, just your common resident, could hold their own with a water conservation conversation with more than other people around the country. Yes. We got a call real quick. We got Roy on the phone. Roy, quick, you got about 1 minute with Zach Renstrom. What do you got? What are you thinking?
Hey, Zach. I'm just wondering about the water quality in Bloomington Hills. It has not been good in years. And a lot of that comes from the distribution system out there at Quail Creek. But the taste of that water has not been good for a long time. Are they going to do something about it, or is that a St. George City issue?
So that's,
thanks, Ray.
Yeah, so that's mostly a St. George City issue. In that specific area, I don't know specifically where your water's coming from. So we just wholesale water to St. George City, and then where they distribute it and bush it out, you'd have to ask. But the gentleman you need to call, his name is Scott Taylor. He's really smart, really knowledgeable. He's a great guy. He'd be glad to talk to you. If you called him up and ask and talk to him, he might have a little bit better insights. And, you know, it's one of those things that we do actually come out and test people's water when we have these complaints of, like, what's going on, because we want to know.
How does that look? What does that look like when you do come out and test water? Do you bring, like, a big truck, or is it just a little kit?
It's like a little kit. Basically, we turn on the faucet. We let the faucet run for we call it flush test. We let it run for quite a while, and then it's just a little plastic bottle we stick underneath there, and we take a sample, and then we run some tests on it.
And do you find anomalies in different places around southern Utah, or is it kind of all the same?
No. Our water quality here actually is quite extreme. So we just have to, we kind of look for certain things based on what they're talking about. So, like, one of the things that we do a lot of testing on is copper and lead.
Okay.
And so we literally go into people's homes, turn on their faucet, take samples, and we test it, because that's
let it run for a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. Let it get down there. Okay.
Yeah, because lead and copper it's been a big issue lately. So we test for that. And so the other thing that we test for is there's some organic compounds that humans, it's like a musky taste.
Yeah.
And it's not bad, but the taste is not very good. And so we will actually go in and test for those compounds. And if we see them going on at the water treatment plant, we actually will adjust the way we run our system to try to remove those out.
Do you find that you're able to change, I don't know, pH balance or some of these anomalies to whole sections, or is it just in a house, or how does that work?
It'd be a whole section. Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes, like, wells, I lived in the Ivins for a little while, and I could tell the taste of when the water was coming from Snow Canyon wells or from the water treatment plant. And so some people are more sensitive. I'm very sensitive. I can smell it. I can taste it.
Yeah.
And so I could almost tell. It's like, okay, this water's from the water treatment plant. This water's from, Snow Canyon well field. You know, I go certain places and you can taste that. So not everybody can, but
yeah. Well,
if anybody's concerned, those Brita filters actually do really well.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that you really encourage the filters then to help out, whether it's Brita, whether it's the ones in your fridge or whatever.
So I don't use one because I think our water quality here is so high and such a good level.
Okay.
But if you are, so I will say, when I lived in Kansas, I did use a Brita filter because I was concerned about the pesticides and all the stuff out there.
Yeah.
But, and they actually work pretty good. And it's just those little pitchers that you stick in there. And if water's cooler, there's less of a taste.
Okay.
But as someone that tests the water, sees where it comes from, I drink the water right out of the tap. My kids drink the water right out of the tap because I really think we have phenomenal water quality.
You're like a water sommelier, I swear. I just see them like doing the little swivel test and they're... You know,
I would be good at that. I really would.
I think you would. I think you would. He's Zach Redstrom, the Washington County Water Conservancy District. Zach, it's been a real pleasure. I hope everybody has learned some stuff. We've got some cool texts coming in. Roy, Richard, that called in. Real quick, we got about 30 seconds. What are you doing? Christmas? Are you staying home? What are you doing?
Staying home, but I do want to call out. Tonight and tomorrow morning, I have staff working all night long.
Oh my gosh.
All of Christmas. These people leave their family, and I want to say thank you to them for the hard work.
Okay. All right. Zach Renstrom, the Washington County Water Conservancy District, had a lot of fun. The water boy is right here with us. Man, that was, I just having this view of you swirling water in a big wine flute. All right, KDXU News Time, 9:59. Fox News is next. Closing
time. From the Angelica's Mexican Grill Studio, KDXU St. George, KDXU FM, KDXU FM HD, Colorado.